Hi, this is OKSDM, creator of Sagas, setting in genre agnostic system, and you are listening to Tale of the Manticore.
The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Tale of the Manticore, Season 2. Like the creature from which it takes its name, Tale of the Manticore is a mashup, a crossbreeding between two different species of storytelling. Here, you will find the unpredictability of old-school RPG paper and dice games with the storycraft of a dark fantasy novel. No character is sacred, and no character will be spared if the dice decide their fate is at hand. According to lore, the tail of a manticore is barbed with cruel iron spikes. There will be much pain in the days ahead. Last time, on Tale of the Manticore. In Chapter 63, the companions pass through the Oval Room and discover a second library. Unlike the one on the first floor, this library seems to actually have been used by the residents of Whitestone Castle before it was abandoned. It has a staircase going up to the third floor, and also a door that Catsbane knows leads to his former master's laboratory. After Shawnee skillfully picks the lock on it, Catsbane enters and starts up the stairs in order to collect the item he went there to find, a pot of sleeping dust. Just then, from the adjacent library, there's a sound at the top of the stairs. Yellowfly quickly covers their light and signals directions to each member of his party, hoping to execute a successful ambush. When everyone is in place, he sets the lantern a little apart from his hiding spot and uncovers it, intending the light as bait. The plan works, and in a few moments, the sound from the top of the stairs gets louder. Before long, they can hear something large lumbering down the stairs, drawing raspy breaths and rumbling a growl in its throat. When the moment is right, they spring their trap. But only Catsbane has any real success, injuring the thing that appears with a volley of magic missiles. Now the companions can see the monster for what it is, a hulking, deformed mass of muscles, dog-like in shape, but with a disturbingly anthropomorphic face. It issues forth a magical howl that causes Jace, Catsbane, and Shawnee all to flee, and in three different directions. Now, only Yellowfly and Bazu are left to face the awful thing. No more forgetting to level up my characters. I'm going to start with that. And today is a double level up episode, because Bazu becomes level 6 and Catsbane gets to level 7. Let's do Bazu first. He's definitely earning those experience points right now, as he looks the Yethound in the eye and somehow finds the courage to stand his ground. First up, a d6 of new hit points. A 6? That's fantastic. His new total is 21 after his -1 constitution penalty is applied. What a jump from where he was. Let's see, does anything else go up? His basic attack bonus and saving throws stay the same. Oh, this is something. His ability to pray for miracles improves tremendously, adding a 3rd and 4th level spell to his current capacity. He'll have to wait to pray for these though, so delayed gratification on that, I guess. How about stat increases? Let's find out. For strength, a 5. No good there. Intelligence, a 2. How about wisdom? Nope, I got a 5. Dexterity? Another 2. A 6 on the die for constitution would be so good. Let's try. I've got a 3. And charisma? A 1. Nada. Nothing. Zip. Still, the hit points and spells are a big deal, and I'm satisfied. Let's move on to Catsbane. He'll get a d4 for new hit points. A 4? Wow, this is my lucky day. His new total is 21, which is, coincidentally, the same as Bazu. Also like Bazu, he gets no change to his basic attack bonus or saving throws, but instead gets 2 new spells, though his will be one of 1st and one of 4th level. This is my favorite part, so I'm saving that for last. Let's do potential stat increases next. For strength, a 4. Intelligence, a 5. Wisdom, I've rolled a 2. Dexterity. Now this would increase his AC bonus. No, a 1 is not gonna do it. Constitution. A 3. Oh boy. Charisma. A 6. Hooray! Let's see, that takes his 11 to a 12. Excellent. Even if it doesn't give him any bonuses. I'm just happy to finally get one. Okay, here comes the best part. New spells. Do you remember when he called upon the entity that provides his third eye in the last episode? It had been a while since he'd done so, having learned to cast Magic Missile without its help. Doing so must have reminded this being of Catsbane's value to it. Perhaps it knows there's a tug of war going on between it and a demon with Catsbane in the middle, and it decides to pull hard by giving these two new spells to the valuable human prize. I'll get a D12 ready and we'll see what those spells are going to be. As usual, a repeat from this season or last will prompt a reroll on a table of exotic spells. The roll for the new level 1 spell is a 2. That's Detect Magic. Oh, I love that, and it really makes sense as a gift from this entity. But Detect Magic is just a party favor. The real gift is... What does a 3 give him? Let's see. Dimension Door. That also sounds exactly right, but to be honest, I don't really know what this spell does. Let me read up and report back. Hang on. Okay, according to the OSE SRD, when this spell is used, the caster or another creature can be teleported away up to 360 feet. The spell can be used on an unwilling target, but then a save to resist is allowed. That is super cool. The only thing is, like Bazu, Catsbane will have to rest before he can use his new spells. Speaking of Bazu, I think I figured out how he found the courage to stand his ground and face the Yethound while almost everyone else fled. Dramatis Personae. Bazu. 8.5 years ago. The porridge that Father Magios had given him was almost inedible. The monks of Mazagar had far too many rules about using fire for mundane tasks, Bazu thought. One such rule was that the breakfast meal must never be prepared over a cook fire or a stove, and so Brother Magios had prepared his oatmeal by setting it aside to soften in the sun for half an hour. This resulted in a meal that resembled a bowl of cold leather scraps. Bazu grimaced his way through it, trying not to feel ungrateful. He was glad of the hospitality. A cleric of Siddal in the land of Mazagar might not have expected such a warm welcome, but the two religions understood that they had more in common than indifference, and there was a custom that said a Camranthian priest would always find hospitality at a church of Siddal, and vice versa. Bazu was in a monastery, not a church, but the rule held all the same. One thing that surprised him was that Magios had given him a bunk in the same dormitory where the other monks slept. He had not expected much more than a pallet in the undercroft, or even in the stables. He had slept poorly all the same, having gone to sleep thinking of Nality, as he had every single night since their last disastrous meeting, and having woken up feeling wretched and lonely. Presently, they were in a little kitchen. It was part of the main building that also included the dormitories and the chapel. After separating to observe morning prayers with the other monks, Father Magios had collected him and brought him here for breakfast. When the meal was finished, his host reached across the table to clear away Bazu's bowl. As he did so, the wide, loose collar of his homespun frock drooped down and revealed a long scar of white and pink running diagonally from the man's collarbone to his navel. Bazu quickly looked away, hoping the other man had not noticed how his eyes had gone wide for an instant. When he looked back, Father Magios was inspecting Bazu's bowl, so it was a surprise when he declared,
"You are a man of impeccable courtesy, my brother."
Bazu stammered, a hot flush of embarrassment burning in his cheeks.
"It is rare for any of our guests to actually finish their breakfast."
A warm smile crinkled the corners of the monk's eyes as he said it. When he turned away, Bazu let go a sigh, relieved that he had not offended his host. While Father Magios' back was to him, and he was dipping Bazu's bowl into the washing bucket, he continued,
"And you have not asked about my scar?"
"I am sorry, Father Magios,"
said Bazu, his discomfort abruptly renewed and evident in his voice.
"I intended no disrespect."
"None taken, my brother in faith. None taken. Would you like to know how I got it?"
"I would not presume to ask, Father."
"You didn't ask, brother. I offered. For, as Mazagar commands, we must never make a secret of knowledge."
Bazu could tell that Father Magios was setting aside orthodoxy for his benefit, and he felt instant affection for the man, who was clearly both empathetic and kind.
"We used to number 2 dozen monks here,"
he said, turning back to Bazu while waving a hand through the air as an indication that he meant the whole monastery.
"Now there are but 16 of us."
Bazu was not sure what to say. He took the safe route.
"It must be difficult to keep up with all that work."
"Good to show the one you are. Well, here's the story. Some 5 or 6 years ago, I answer and knock at the door. That door.
Father Magios pointed to the kitchen door that led outside. Bazu noticed there was a bar across it of different color than the wood of the door itself.
I open it to find a man wearing ring mail and holding a long sword. I greeted him mildly and told him that weapons were not permitted on holy ground, but he declined to put his blade away. He told me that he came for a book of sublime revelations, and that I was to surrender it to him. I explained that I had never even heard of the book he sought. It was at this point that I noticed several other men, all armed and armored as he was, in the yard behind him. He ordered me to step aside, raising his weapon, and in that moment, I saw in his eyes that he meant to kill me, but I did not move.
Bazu responded by asking why he did not simply let the man pass.
Surely they would have ransacked the monastery, and eventually, finding nothing, they would have left.
Let a wicked man such as him into the house of God? I think not. Also, Masgar, forgive me. I had lied to him. We did keep the book hidden here. We still do.
Bazu now understood, but he still had questions.
How did you find the courage to stand against such a man, unarmed and unarmored? And how did you survive?
Because I wear the armor of faith, of course, as do you, even if you do not yet know it. I knew the Lord of Light would protect me, or else bring me to serve him in the afterlife. So, I was not afraid. Of course, this mercenary, whoever he was, struck me down. The other soldiers killed some of my fellow brothers and turned this place upside down. They even set fire to the stable and the pigsty, but they departed empty-handed. As for me, I was left for dead. Somehow, I did not die. And now, here I am to tell people like you, my brother, that miracles do happen.
With your long-forgotten name, we call upon you.
We call upon you.
In the words of the unspeakable language, we call upon you.
We call upon you.
By the spilt blood of the wicked who walk upon this world sprouting the words of false idols, we call upon you.
We call upon you.
On the land of the dead harvest, that which brings the earth itself into your service, Yamel, we call upon you.
We call upon you. We call upon you. We call upon you.
The Sprouting, a Call of Cthulhu actual play podcast by Blighthouse Studio. Find us on your podcatcher of choice.
I ended the last episode in the middle of a combat sequence, and now, here we are, halfway through the subsequent episode, and I still haven't resolved it. So, let's catch up. The situation is as follows. Two of the PCs are in the library on the second floor of Whitestone Castle. Yellowfly and Bazu remain in the room with the Yethhound, after withstanding its special fear ability. Yellowfly is stunned, and Bazu is starting to realize he cannot harm the creature. Jace has run up the stairs to the unexplored third story of the castle, in the direction from which the creature came. Shanae has fled away from the library and to the south. Catsbane, halfway up the stairs in the adjoining room, scrambles up to the tower's third level. Well, there's no putting off this fight any further. Let's get into the action and find out what will happen next. I don't mind admitting that I'm a bit worried. Chapter 64, Part 1, Day 183, Late Morning, Party Status. Yellowfly, 39 of 39 hit points. Shanae, 30 of 30. Jace, 45 of 45. Catsbane, 21 of 21. Bazu, 21 of 21. Spells available. Catsbane has memorized Magic Missile, Invisibility, Mirror Image, Haste, and Slow. Bazu has prayed for Cure Light Wounds, times 2, Bless, and Silence 15-foot Radius.
Entering combat.
Continued from the previous episode, we are starting with Round 3, Initiative. The Party. 4. The Yethhound. 5. Given how things left off, it's no surprise that the Yethhound wins the initiative. The question is, what will it do? It might attack those present, or else go off in pursuit of any of the others. Actually, the monster description specifically says that chase is its preferred tactic, so I'm going to give it a high chance to do just that. Here's a d12. On a 1 to 4, it pursues Shanae. A 5 to 8 means it goes after Jace. On a 9, it attacks Bazu. On a 10, Yellowfly. It's unlikely it'll go after Catsbane, who not only hurt it, but is also the furthest away. So that will only happen on an 11. A 12 will be a reroll. Yeah, I know it's a clunky mechanic, but it'll work. The roll. A 4. It goes after Shaun A. Alright then. This result effectively ends combat, at least for now, and we'll need to pivot to a pursuit mechanic. I still like the one I made up earlier, so I'll stick with that. In case you've forgotten, here's a refresher. Each side rolls off against the other using a d6. 3 successes are needed to win. Every round a modifier gets added to encourage a quick resolution. Now, I wonder which way Shaun A will run. There are several choices, but only 2 that make sense. Away in a straight line, or back the way they came, through the oval room. I'll roll high-low. High means a straight line. On a d20. A 16. Okay, let's begin. Round 1. Shaun A. A 1. The Yeth Hound. A 6. Sometimes the dice gods just know, don't they? Shaun A's collision with the Yellowfly didn't just stun him, it staggered her, too. Blind with terror, she bounces off her companion, recovers, and continues to run, shrieking as she goes. Shaun A will take a -1 to her next roll. As for the Yeth Hound, it grins horribly at Bazu before bounding off after its prey. Round 2. Shaun A. 6 minus 1 is 5. The Yeth Hound. A 5. Shaun A's feet pound against the flagstones as she races in a straight line down the hall, past a pair of openings to either side. The one to her left leads to the oval room. The other leads to a sitting room the party has yet to enter. A quick roll to see if the windows in the sitting room are open. On a d6, a 1 to 4 means they're closed. Oh, a 6. They're open. That might matter later, but for now, Shaun A ignores all reason and runs headlong into darkness. As she cannot see, even though this round is a tie, I'm forcing another -1 penalty to her next roll. Round 3. Shaun A. 4 minus 2 is 2. The Yeth Hound. A 5. Shaun A's lungs burn and her heart is banging in her chest as she runs to the very end of the hall where she's forced to stop. By now, Yellowfly and Bazu are also in this chain of pursuit, and Bazu has scooped up the lantern. Now, Shaun A sees that her hallway terminates in a dead end, with another display shield painted with the royal crest mounted on the wall. But, looking at my map, there is still hope. There's a door set into the wall to her left, and it's wide open. There's no need to roll for that, because this room is Caulfrey's salon, and Krell must have passed through it after his transformation. The salon has a large window, with a scalloped wooden frame that looks out over the courtyard of Whitestone Castle. Might it be open? Rolling a d6. A 4. Unfortunately for Shaun A, it is closed. She dashes left through the door all the same, with the beast right on her heels. One more success, and it will catch her. Now I need to add a modifier, and the only thing that makes sense is another -1 penalty to Shaun A. She's out of her mind, not thinking straight. Also, she doesn't know the layout of the castle, and Krell does. Round 4. Shaun A. A 3 minus 3 is 0. The Yeth Hound. A 2. Krell catches up to her, just as she slams into the doorframe and rebounds into the salon.
Entering combat.
For the sake of simplicity, I'll call this a new combat and start again at round 1. Initiative. Since he won the pursuit, I am giving Krell the initiative by DM Fiat. I'm also giving him a +2 to his first attack roll, since he's coming from behind, and Shaun A is not properly defending herself. Shaun A's armor class is 14, so the Yeth Hound needs a 9 to hit her. The roll. An 8. Somehow, instinct tells her the exact moment to roll to the side, and she obeys. The monster crashes into the wall right under the window. Is there any chance it would open from the impact? That would be so cool, but there's no mechanic for handling something like that in D&D. I'll just say that if any of the PCs roll a natural 20 on their turn, that it does. Shaun A can now attack. Screaming madly, she lashes out with her sword. She'll need a 17 to hit. A 10. She cuts empty air. Yellowfly and Bazu now burst through the door and set upon the monster. Yellowfly chops down with his righteous blade, needing a 9 to hit. His roll. A 2. He aims too far to the right and draws a line of sparks beside the creature's head where the blade skates across the wall. Bazu takes his shot. And a 17 hits. Unfortunately, the Yeth Hound shrugs off the blow, completely unhurt, and by now Bazu knows for sure that his staff cannot harm this creature. We are on to round two. Initiative. The party. A three. The Ethound. A two. Shawnee's eyes are like saucers. She desperately scans the room for a way out and finds two. There's a door nearby, but closed, and another one, kitty corner to her, that is open. She makes a snap decision, spins on her heel, and runs for the open door. Yellowfly aims another blow and strikes. He needs a nine or better. A four. Oh, brother. Yellowfly is going to have to start doing a lot better. Over to Bazu. He knows his weapon is no use against the creature, and he has no spells that would help this situation. But is there any chance he would have figured out that this monster hates daylight? This is where solo play becomes really tricky. The chance is very low, that's for sure. I'll give him a Hail Mary. On a natural 20, he'll have an epiphany. Unlucky 13 means he just stands there, looking about the room for anything he could put to their advantage. There isn't much. A writing desk, stacked with papers, and a life-sized portrait of a smiling King Culfrey, flanked by flower-bearing children. These are not useful, and Bazu's turn is wasted. That brings us to the Ethound. Will it pursue Shawnee? Likely, yes. A 4 in 6 chance feels right. A 5. Interesting. It stays and turns to face Yellowfly, snapping its jaws and drooling. It springs at him, needing a 13 to hit his AC of 16. An 18 hits, and Yellowfly is bitten for 4 points of a possible 2 to 8. It is round 3. Initiative. Yellowfly and Bazu. A 3. The Ethound. A 1. Shawnee is, for all intents and purposes, out of this fight. We'll catch up with her and the other companions later, but for now, it's up to Fly and Bazu to overcome the Ethound on their own. Yellowfly is long overdue for a hit. He only needs a 9 or better, for crying out loud. His roll? A 14. There you go, Yellowfly. The Silverthorn carves a line of pure white sunlight into the Ethound as it connects a second time. It does its plus as damage, that's 3 points, and Krell now has only 7 hit points remaining. Does Bazu notice that the monster now wears 2 lines of white where the Silverthorn has cut it? And would he put 2 and 2 together? I'm now going to allow him to apply his wisdom modifier to his d20 roll, so on a 19 or 20, he'll figure out the Ethound's weakness, the roll. An 11 is not good enough. Now it's Krell's turn. His fangs seek Yellowfly's throat. A 12 just misses. It is round 4. Initiative. Yellowfly and Bazu. A 5. The Yethound. A 2. Yellowfly attacks. A 15 hits, and another 3 points are dealt. Krell staggers under the blow, emitting a piercing whine. It's Bazu's turn. He has a 2 in 20 chance to puzzle things through. A 14. The Yethound retaliates. A 16 will hit Yellowfly for 7 points. A savage bite to Yellowfly's sword arm. That brings us to round 5. Initiative. Yellowfly and Bazu. A 6. The Ethound. A 3. Yellowfly slashes back. 17. That's 3 more damage and another white line across the Ethound's hide. The monster is down to a single hit point. It rears up on its hind legs and tries to overpower the fighter. A 1. Critical miss. Krell will lose his next turn. This gives Bazu 2 chances to realize the window is the key, and it also gives Yellowfly a free attack. Bazu's roll with advantage. Haha! I see a 19. Bazu has figured it out. Just for fun. Will Yellowfly hit? A 10 means he does. Here's what happens. As the bulky monster stands on its hind legs, trying to use its own weight to bear Yellowfly to the ground, the fighter stabs it in the chest with his shining blade and pierces his heart. At the same moment, Bazu throws open the windows, and sunlight floods into the room. When the light strikes the Ethound, it turns to wispy embers and dissipates into the air, looking like a swarm of flies buzzing around Yellowfly's sword for a brief moment. And then, it's gone. Thanks for listening to Tale of the Manticore. If you've enjoyed the show and would like to help to support it, there are a bunch of ways to do so. You can recommend it online or to friends. You can like and repost episode announcements on social media. You can pick up One Shot in the Dark, the Pendulum Worldbuilding Tool, or Encyclopedia Manticorica on DriveThruRPG. Finally, you can rate or review the show on your podcatcher of choice. My thanks to everyone for their support of the show. At this time, please allow me to share one of your very kind reviews. This one was left by Goat of Steel on Podcast Addict. Go to Steelwrites. I'm no fan of D&D, but I am a huge fan of this brilliant, dark, honest, thrilling podcast. Great audio, mood, and story. So happy I still have loads of episodes left to binge listen to. I'm pretty new to solo RPG, but this podcast is inspiring and helping my own game as well as providing fantastic entertainment. Thank you so much. And thank you right back, Goat of Steel. I'm so happy that you're enjoying the show, and I am thrilled if it inspires you to try some solo gaming on your own. Now I'd like to take a moment to thank the great voice talent in this episode. Father Magios is played wonderfully by newcomer Fabiano Sampaio, and as always, Andrew Fling brings Bazu to life. My gratitude to Fabiano and Andrew. I really enjoyed putting that monastery scene together. For listeners who'd like to get in touch with me, I'm at ManticoreTale on X, or Tale of the Manticore Podcast on Instagram. And there's always email, taleofthemanticore@gmail.com. Finally, I keep a blog where I post all kinds of show and RPG-related stuff, like art, maps, tables, crafts, and show notes. You can find it at taleofthemanticore.blogspot.com. The adventure will continue on the next episode of Tale of the Manticore, the story where chaos rules.
Hey there, this is Chas, the DM of Rollbound, a D&D actual play podcast set in my universe known as Teosia on the continent of Kelmra. Follow a narrative, character-driven story centered around a group of characters known as the Silver Lining in our second campaign, Unfettered Epic. Find joy, laughter, and a little bit of ridiculousness every Monday on YouTube and Spotify. Be sure to check out our Twitter, at RollboundPC, for our Discord server and updates on our own unique TTRPG system, Dreams of Teosia.
No, walk back, come back. You need to see this. This could be the most glorious thing you've seen all day.